Coming up on the Shelley Irwin Show podcast today, over the weekend, Pearl Street was closed due to an accident involving a tanker. We talked to the Grand Rapids Fire Department about cleanup. Hope for Single Moms joins in to talk about from barely surviving to thriving. A representative from Scouting America joins in with a scouting update. Citizens Research Council turns 110 years old, and April is National Child Abuse Prevention Month. We talk about that as well.
Did you hear the boom Saturday morning? We have good news at the very end. No lives lost, but wow, we had ourselves a tanker collision, for lack of better terms. I normally don't, quote, cover these type of stories, but I want to know a bit about behind the scenes and, of course, a way to thank our first responders. Deputy Chief of Operations with our Grand Rapids Fire Department, Jack Johnson, in the call. Did you get the call at 8 in the morning, my friend? Good morning.
Good morning, and thanks for having me. I did. Part of our protocol is whenever there's a hazardous materials incident in the city, I'm on the phone tree to get that notification as well. So they gave me a call about 8:30 and let me know we had a rather large incident going on the freeway.
Yes. Let's cut to the chase. No lives lost?
No lives lost. We two non-life-threatening injuries were transported to the hospital via our local ambulance provider.
And yet, looking from the why, from where I was that morning, which shook me up pretty significantly, not only as one who's curious, but I thought for sure we would have a major tragedy on our hands. But again, that's why we don't spread rumors, and we wait until all signs are such that we can spread the news. What makes for a hazmat situation?
So any hazardous material spill, and depending on what the hazardous material is, depends on the quantity, whether it becomes we've got different levels, a level one, a level two hazmat, and really what that dictates is who also gets notified. So for instance, this tanker fire with 8,500 gallons of gasoline on fire, as well as getting into our ecological system, it requires more than just the fire department to respond, right? We need to, we called our environmental services division with the city of Grand Rapids, as well as the state Eagle, to come in and help us ensure that the environment wasn't going to be any more negatively impacted than it would. So,
and those decisions have to be made pretty quickly, I would think.
Absolutely, yep. Henceforth, why we have that decision tree. So not only did I get called in that decision tree, Eagle as well as ESD did early on in the incident.
Yes. And there was a collision between a tanker and another truck?
Yeah, there was two semi-trucks that were involved, and I'm not sure exactly how the collision happened, whether it was due to, you know, any numerous things that cause a crash, but yeah, just the two semi-trucks were involved.
And both gentlemen escaped. Again, if this is factual, one even the tanker climbing out of the tank before, out of his cab before the explosion?
Yeah, right after the crash, he escaped.
Yes. So there we are. Good news on an Easter weekend. So what does it take to put out that fire?
A lot of coordination and a specific thing that we use in the fire service called foam. It's a product that recently has been in the negative light because of the PFOSs that are found in some firefighting foam. We have currently replaced a lot of that with the PFOS-free foam. And what it does, excuse me, when you have a large basically vat, an open vat, because the top of that tanker had burned off, so it was basically a giant pool of gasoline that was on fire. You have to understand, it's not the liquid that's burning, right? It turns into a vapor, and then the vapor burns. So the way we put out these types of fires, we have to somehow suppress that vapor, and we have the product that mixes with water and foam, and we roll it on, and it kind of puts a protective cover so that vapor can't continue to ignite. Now, that liquid's hot, and it also burns off that foam a little bit, so we have to consistently put that foam on there.
And, of course, not only you, but your brothers and sisters in uniform that had to stop the traffic, I'm sure, immediately, correct?
Correct.
And then I think some had to sit in traffic for a little bit.
Yeah, so initially, normally that's the Michigan State Police's area on the freeways. However, they were busy with another crash, so the Grand Rapids Police Department handled it. They had quite a few units assigned to not only shut down southbound 131 where the accident was, but because it was right on the wall, they also had to shut down northbound 131 and the on-ramps to that. So it takes a lot of resources to shut down a freeway in an incident like that.
All right, and then, of course, now you look at, it looks like we have the lanes open, one lane open, correct?
I think there's two lanes open, and there's two lanes shut down on the southbound side, and there's one lane shut down on northbound side.
Is your job over with this recent happening?
So we will there's always work behind the scenes, right? So now we have to figure out for cost recovery, so the citizens don't have to bear the brunt of the response cost recovery for the insurance companies to get us reimbursed for the foam. So there'll be some continued work in the background. But as far as the emergency response, yeah, it's over for us now.
Thank you again for your service. You need more firefighters?
We do. We do. We actually are running a hiring process right now, and we're looking for anyone that would like to become a firefighter. You need to have a high school diploma and a driver's license, and you can go to joingrfire.com and take a look and see if the process is something you'd want to be involved with.
More ladies stepping up to the plate?
Absolutely. We actually have a class going right now where we have one female in it out of the 13, and we got her from MDOT. She was a volunteer firefighter and really wanted to get into the full-time fire service, and we're happy to have her.
Is it a rewarding job?
It's a very rewarding job. I've been in it for 28 years, and there isn't a day that I haven't been to work at least 30 to 45 minutes early because I'm excited about starting the shift.
Wonderful. What do you need from the community with a situation like what happened Saturday, or what do you not need in closing?
Yeah, so patience and understanding. It's a major undertaking, and it impacts everyone's day when we have to shut down a major thoroughfare like that. And just be patient with us while we're in the recovery phase as well, and we want to make sure that the roads are safe to travel on, you know, moving forward. So,
how do I find out more about what you do? Please, thanks.
Yeah, you can go to the City of Grand Rapids website and click on the fire department, and you can see all the great things the Grand Rapids Fire Department does for the community.
Great. Okay, once again, thank you for your service. Is that okay to say?
Absolutely.
Jack Johnson, and your leadership as well, Deputy Chief of Operations. You check your email on the weekends too, don't you?
I'm on 24/7.
Me too. Thanks. Surviving to Thriving, a story those with hope for single moms sees right now. We talked to founding director Carla Ludwig, your sidekick student Sasha Aller, with the details about the role of empowering mothers, enriching families, plus launching a Hope Workforce Institute. Good morning, Carla. Glad you're here.
Good morning, Shelley. How are you?
Good. Good. Before, and love your story and your role of giving back. Would you introduce Sasha for us?
Yeah, with me this morning is Sasha Aller, and I met Sasha a couple years ago, and she is one of our college student moms, and she is just doing fantastic, working on her BBA, but in the meantime, she has become our first paid staff and is the program director and curriculum developer for Hope Workforce Institute, which is launching later this month on April 22nd.
Yes, good. Mm-hmm. You are here, Sasha. Stand by. Carla, I always like to do the beginnings. You, founding director, Hope for Single Moms. We worked before, we'll work again. How did you find what you do now?
So it actually came from a personal experience. I had a daughter who became a single mom, and she went to get a fresh start, and without career skills, it's hard to provide well for yourself and your child. And we saw that, offered her the opportunity to return to college, which she did, which opened my eyes to, wow, not college student and mom. So that started my desire to help other women. And since then, we know college isn't for everyone, so we've decided to expand to workforce training.
And Sasha, again, what's the journey been like thus far with your involvement in this wonderful organization, Hope for Single Moms?
Yeah, good morning. Thank you for having me, too. I appreciate it. So I joined the program back in 2024, and I met Carla when I had just became a single mom. And it was really hard. It was a big transition for me, doing motherhood by myself. When I met Carla, I was pretty much at like my rock bottom. I felt like I had lost all hope in God and any community. I was doing everything by myself. And when Carla came into my life, she renewed something in me. She sparked faith in something bigger than myself because she helped me to believe in myself again. And I had lost track of all dreams. And when I went to her, she was like, let's figure it out. Let's like figure out what you're interested in. And I got back into college and I had more credits than I thought I had. And so now I'm like really close to finishing my bachelor's degree because I joined Hope for Single Moms. And then Carla became my mentor and it's been truly an amazing gift. We got really, really close and I shared some of my experience of how I've been a professional organizer in my past and how I've done cleaning. And we kind of just had a meeting of the minds and we're like, we feel so aligned. And Carla was like, I would like you to work for Hope for Single Moms. I want you to share your gifts. And I was like truly, truly inspired and blessed. So it's been nothing but a blessing and I can't wait to help more girls in my shoes.
That is what it's all about, paying it forward. Dr. Carla Ludwig, how would you describe Hope for Single Moms, your tagline, empowering mothers, enriching families?
Basically, what we do for women is, like Sasha said, our goal is to give them hope, help give them direction, and just let them know they're not alone. And so our goal is basically to provide each woman with whatever support she needs, like you would your own daughter. So not only do we help with college trades or workforce training, but like Sasha said, we provide mentors and we provide encouragement. And, you know, when the ladies find out that someone is there, that they can achieve their goals, which they want to take care of their children, then I can't believe the change that they have. So we're excited to be able to have their trust and to be able to say, you can do it, and we're going to help you.
Yes. What is the Hope Workforce Institute that opens on April 22nd?
Oh, it's so awesome. So it's a pathways program, but it's so much more than that. The way that Carla and I designed this is it's a 3-month-long certification program, and we're going to have different pathways. In 2026, we're starting with entrepreneurship and cleaning. But for the first 2 months, we partner with nonprofits throughout Grand Rapids to help give our women who come into the program some stability. We give them parenting through trauma, nutrition for the whole family, so that way they start to learn how to make healthy foods on a budget. They also learn how to have confidence in the workplace. We bring in a partner, Redeem Style, who comes in and does a whole styling consultation and color analysis, and we do professional headshots. And then the whole last month is the pathways training. And so we've been doing cleaning this time around. So at the end of their cleaning and training, it's pretty intense, but they get connected with a job around the area that will pay them 20 plus an hour that will flex with their with them being a single mom. So that's our whole goal, is to get them into a job.
Yes. And is it true, Carla, most of these women are from ALICE and below poverty households who are working hard?
Yes. So what we found is the majority of our college and trade ladies are ALICE households, which means that they're working but can't pay the bills. And what we saw the trend in our pilot program for Cleaning for Hope is that they are poverty and below. Mm-hmm. And we have really help them navigate the social services as well as just basic foundational skills, and they're amazing. Mm-hmm.
So as we speak, this 6th day of April, where are we in the cohort? Are we bringing in new women here?
Yeah, so we're really close, actually, for our first cohort of girls to graduate. We're going to be doing our HOPE Workforce launch. That's April 22nd at the Grand Rapids Chamber. So during that time, these girls are going to graduate. They're going to get a certificate. They're going to get, like, they're just going to get a polished resume, cover letter, references, letter of recommendation, and then interviews with cleaning companies. One girl's already landed a job that could possibly be a management role at the end of the year. And then at the end of May is when we're going to bring in our new set of girls. So we're really excited.
What do you need from the community, Carla? What do you need from the community when this, in the big picture? Yep.
You know, we're just so excited about the ladies we get to work with. And what we'd love for you to see is that these women are amazing. And honestly, who doesn't need a little help at times during life? And so they're in a particular stage of just needing some guidance. And what we're looking for is other people. We do offer the program tuition free. Right now we're funded by grants, and we're looking for more grants and donors. Mm-hmm. And in 12 weeks and for about $5,000, we can get them from poverty into the workforce. We're looking for partners also who are willing to teach one of our 48 workshops and provide the ladies with just everyday skills, including financial literacy, and also for people who might have the gift of hospitality and provide a lunch for the ladies between their workshops.
Great. What do you leave us with, Sasha?
Just thank you so much for everybody who's already invested in Hope for Single Moms. You've truly changed my life, as has Carla and Hope for Single Moms, and I just look forward to sharing my gifts with people and helping more girls like me.
Thank you, Sasha. All our Dr. Carla Ludwig, you going to have another fashion show this year?
We sure are. Fashion for Future is back, and it is October 22nd at the Gowie Center. And I think we have a famous model joining us once again this year. We're excited to welcome back Shelley as one of our models. And
I had so much fun a couple, 3 years ago or whenever we did it.
This will be your third year doing
it. Yes,
so we're excited to have her back. And our fashion show is going to feature both our grads, student moms, as well as professional models and celebrity. It's a chance to meet them, see the amazing work that they're doing, and celebrate their accomplishments.
One more time, how do we find out more about your wonderful organization, Hope for Single Moms?
So Hope for Single Moms, it is at the URL hsmgr.org. We also have Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube.
Thank you both for what you do.
Thank you.
Thank you, Shelley.
You a scout? Have you been a scout? Can you be a scout? Or maybe when will you be a scout? Scouting strong in our own backyard. Scouting America, Michigan Crossroads Council, Aaron Gatch in the house. Be careful what you wish for, Aaron. I talk to you in the community and I say, come on in, and you're in. I'm glad
yes,
you're here.
Yeah.
Yes.
Good morning,
yes.
Shelley.
Good morning to you. How long have you been a scout in your life?
Oh my gosh, Shelley. Hard questions now. Over 30 years, I guess, since I first got that uniform when I was in kindergarten and my mom and dad took me to the school meeting. And you know what? I've been having fun every single day with a new adventure in scouting, so I just stay. You know what I mean?
I know what you mean,
okay.
For sure. There we are. I'm glad that you are here. A big role, obviously, you play with our local scoutings. And let's just remind you, I'm not introducing you as Boy Scouts. I'm introducing you to Scouting America, right?
Yeah, that's right. Scouting America. Yep, you bet.
Yes. What is your role?
So I serve as the Deputy Scout Executive here for the state of Michigan, and I think we're on a mission to just talk about what kids need today, and not in the context of what they need in scouting, the context of what our children need growing up in this era, and how scouting may play into that. And frankly, some of the different programs and partnerships and unique things that today's scouting has available that we just want to make sure that parents and schools and businesses know about.
How soon can a little one get involved in scouting? And I think you're both for boys and girls.
Absolutely, yeah. So scouting programs are certainly open to children as they join kindergarten, all the way through their 21st birthday, if you can believe it. Boys and girls in a numerous amount of programming.
What is today's role of a young scout? Is it still a den mother? I'm going back to like when my brother was involved. And you meet off-site. Tell me more about what scouting is today.
Well, scouting is today boys and girls, so it's family-based. So it doesn't matter if your aunt can bring you down there. You go with your brother and sister. You go with your grandma. Your mom brings you. Your dad brings you. Your whole family goes together. The entire family participates in Cub Scouting. That's the elementary age programming. Scouts BSA, that's our program for middle school and high school age boys and girls. Shelly, I think you would get a big smile to see the unbelievable young ladies in the last 5 or 6 years earning their Eagle Scout Award, the projects, just like the boys have been doing for so long. And now that we have family-based Cub Scouting, of course, that means the young ladies can work on their Eagle Scout Award. And so a really interesting enhancement in that program. But it's not just those programs, Shelly. It's the lesser-known programs like Exploring a Career when you're in middle school or high school. We partner directly with schools to help young people get a hands-on immersive experience in a career field of their choice so they can test it out, see if that's something for them. And if it is, they can connect with educational institutions like Grand Valley State University to further that education. Maybe it's a training program the employer offers or pays for. What better time than when you're a middle school or high school student to actually get a hands-on feel for that career before you dive right in?
Does one, Aaron, need to be a scout before he or she enters that particular program?
Absolutely not. I appreciate you asking that because we partner directly with schools, and not only for our career exploration programs, but for our leadership programs. You don't have to be a scout, not even for one day, to have your school give us a call and sign up for a leadership program. That can be a one-day field trip retreat. It could be in-school activities to foster SEL learning. Or it can even be something as substantial as our semester-long accredited college program where young people in high school can earn 3 college credits while they're sitting in their high school classroom, all on the study of leadership, character, citizenship. And it's some of these lesser-known programs, Shelley, we just want to get the word out about.
Yes. And, of course, let's talk about a couple elephants in the room. Obviously, scouting takes time. How are you attracting the scout to become a scout versus the other organizations that are competing?
Yeah, I think that's a good question because I think most people know scouting. We are part of the largest youth serving movement in the world. We've been around for over 115 years. And so, you know, Cub Scouts and scouts at, you know, outdoors and campfires and marshmallows. But what we want to get out to our families, to our educational community, is that scouting is certainly fun. You meet new friends, you have adventures, camping and around the world, perhaps, depending on where your scouting adventure takes you. But today's children are facing anxiety levels we've never seen before, mental health issues. And what we believe, based on not our research, but outside research, is we need to get our kids the opportunity to get back to free play, to exploration. We need to instill in them a sense of service. So participating service, so kids doing youth and community service, is linked to higher youth development outcomes. And of course, the studies on young people just being outdoors, lower obesity rates, lower mental health issues, better vision and immunity, cognitive, social development, all of these things that maybe we don't think about as educators, as parents, when we look at scouting or when we think about a program like scouting, all these things are coming right along with that program. Again, whether you bring your child to a Cub Scout program, maybe you want to start your own scouts program for kids in your neighborhood. All of these outcomes come right along with your participation while the kids are having fun, meeting friends, and having great, great adventures, learning skills, right?
Aaron Gatch with us again, Scouting America, Michigan Crossroads Council, doing great things statewide for us. Do you continue to need adults to step forth?
Yeah, we absolutely do. Scouting is a youth movement, meaning it's built on the volunteerism of people in our community. Donors that step forward to fund programs, parents that step forward, raise their hand and say, you know, I'll start a program, a Cub Scout program or a scouting program or something like that in my neighborhood for my kids in my area. We step in to provide all the training and camps and adventures and programs and things just make it really easy for volunteers to raise their hand and participate with their kids.
What about the Eagle Scout Award? How important is that? I guess I'll lead the question still.
You know, Baylor University did an outside study recently we find interesting. So, you know, not, of course, our Eagle Scouts, you know, they're masters at camping and leadership and service and so forth, can lead a team. But what really happens when a young person earns that high award? They found that those Eagle Scouts exhibit higher levels of leadership, character, and community involvement compared to their non-scout peer, maintain a higher lifelong work ethic are much more likely to hold leadership positions at work or school, participate in their community, and the list goes on. But what if you don't make it to Eagle Scout, Shelley? What if you're only involved for a year and a half, 2 years? Tufts University did an outside study on scouting and said as long as a child participates in scouting for 18 months or more, all of these character traits, these start to be statistically different than their non-scout peer. And the longer you stay in, 2 years, maybe you stay in 3 years, maybe four, maybe five, maybe 10, maybe, you know, 35.
Yeah,
the outcomes continue to be differentiated versus their non-scout peers. And so we just want to let parents know and educators know and the business community know, is scouting fun? Do you have great adventures? Do you make wonderful friends and have these memories for a lifetime? Absolutely, you still do. But the kinds of things that young people are facing today, preparing for a career, you know, some of the social media impact that maybe is not so good. Some of the things on leadership, the school systems use the term SEL, social emotional learning. The alignment with the Common Core curriculum here in Michigan. All these things are just things that are packaged in and come along as outcomes when you and your child come and participate in any one of our fun scouting programs.
So where does one start? I'm excited now.
Oh, man, there's just so many access points, but I want to give you the two easiest ones. I think one of the easiest ones is our website, and that's michiganscouting.org. I think also if you'd like and you don't know kind of where to start and you need some direction, a quick email to us also works really well, and that's communications@michiganscouting.org. So either go to michiganscouting.org, poke around, find where you can join a program, start a program. Our contact info is on there. Or if you don't know where, you know, quite where to look, just shoot us an email, communications@michiganscouting.org. We also have pages for our Adventure Point Leadership programs here in Grand Rapids that I mentioned that partner directly with schools. Same with the Exploring program, which is career exploring based. But Shelley, I've got to invite you and your whole crew out to Adventure Point because it's not just for young people. We host business groups and community groups and sports teams and clubs of all kinds right here in Grand Rapids at our Adventure Point facility for conferences and retreats and unique outdoor team building days. And we have 7 more of those all across the state of Michigan if you want a really unique adventure for your adult group as well.
Been there and we'll get there again. What a great recommendation. Okay, Aaron Getz, you have work to do to continue overseeing the scouting that's happening today and planning for the scouting that will happen in the future. Sound good?
Thanks for having me, Shelley. I appreciate it.
Turning 110 years young is the Citizens Research Council. Over the month of April, posting about it, talking with media organizations, you will be very busy. President Eric Lufert with us on behalf of the Citizens Research Council. We'll call you the CRC in a roundabout way. Good morning, Eric.
Good morning. Great to be with you again.
Appreciate you as well. And of course, good to celebrate 110 years. So sustainability key here. I bet you know my first question. Eric, tell me about your Citizens Research Council.
We're a not-for-profit organization that was created with the idea that better information leads to better decision-making. And people, to their credit, run for political office, legislature, city council, county commission. And they know a whole lot about what they do in their day jobs, but don't necessarily know about taxation or city government or a whole lot of other things. So we try to be a source of independent, nonpartisan, trusted information. We do it in a very independent way. We don't try to make government bigger or smaller, but just help people understand how government works and the issues, whether it's the fact that we're not growing as a state or tax issues or state budget, whatever it is. Help them understand all the details, and then they can apply their policy, their political lens to it, and whether that's conservative or progressive or what have you. But if we don't agree on the facts, then we're just talking past each other. So we try to be that source of information that people can come to and trust.
Are you still the only public policy organization in the state that has been around this long, and are you still in demand by policymakers, businesses, foundations, and more?
Yeah, there's other organizations. Some do it on a, you know, they're for hire. They do the work, and they do great stuff. And there's some to the right and some to the left. We are the longest, most trusted organization in the state to be that independent voice. And I forgot the second part of your question.
I guess, are you still in, I think we all know the answers, in demand by policymakers, businesses, foundations?
Yeah, we get a steady stream of phone calls and emails, people looking for information, trying to understand issues. We appear regularly before the legislature in an education way. We don't lobby. And, you know, helping different, the Municipal League and the Township Association and all sorts of government, they come to us asking for help to understand issues, and we're happy to be here for them.
And it looks like, just taking a half a step back, in 110 years, were you instrumental in working with Michigan's 10-year budget crisis?
Yeah, one of the beautiful things about having an organization like ours is that we can be on the outside and give a true perspective on the financial conditions of our state and local governments. So back in the turn of the century, Michigan had sort of a single state recession where things went from bad to worse and people were leaving the state, manufacturing was declining, and we were able to be that outside voice to help people understand that this was not a cyclical thing. This was not because the economy turned sour. It was because of the way we were bringing in money and the way we were spending money and the inequities there and the need to make structural changes. So here we are again now, where the state faces structural budget problems with changes coming from Washington, D.C., affecting Medicaid and SNAP and pushing more responsibilities to the state. And again, we're playing that role of helping our legislators and helping people inside the Beltway and Lansing understand those issues, to understand this is not just something that we can gloss over in a single budget and move on, that we have to address these types of things.
Again, celebrating 110 years, the Citizens Research Council, working with our whole state of Michigan under the leadership, of course, of Eric Lufer, president of your CRC. A couple minutes left, Eric. So if one is listening and says, I need to get involved, what are the steps?
So first of all, our website, crcmich.org, crcmich.org, and helping us with financial support, of course, is important, but helping us to make people aware, to share emails with links to our information, to invite us out to speak at your Lions Club or Kiwanis or Chamber of Commerce or things like that. We're happy to be a resource for people to understand the issues. We have an important question coming up on the ballot in November on whether the state should call a constitutional convention, and we're doing a lot of important work to help people understand what's working and not working with our current state constitution. So come find that information and let people know that it's there. Today we're so divided, and to know there's a place that you can trust for good information is important. Share that.
All right. You think you'll still be around 110 years from now?
I think the organization will. I'm near in the finish line, and we'll watch from the sidelines.
Well, I guess I was going with the council. Yes, wish we all could be around the next 110 years, but until then, each day counts. One more time, best way to find out more information, please, Eric.
crcmich.org, crcmich.org.
Great. Thanks for the conversation.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
April is National Child Abuse Prevention Month, as I often say, every month should be. Together we believe, together we protect. Those on behalf of our wonderful Children's Advocacy Center of Kent County in the house, that would be you, Kyle Leonard. Good morning to you, Kyle.
Good morning.
Yay. You with a big role as well, Megan Van Wy. Good morning to you, Megan.
Good morning.
All right, tell me about your center.
Hi, we at the Children's Advocacy Center are
We help children who have been sexually abused by conducting the forensic interview to assist with the investigation. We also provide therapy and healing for the child victims after the investigation. And so what would happen without a children's advocacy center is that the child would have to talk to a law enforcement officer in uniform with a badge, with a gun. They'd then have to talk to Child Protective Services. And then finally, when they got to therapy, they would then have to tell about what happened. At the children's advocacy center, instead, they get to talk to a expert in interviewing children and who looks just like a regular person who might look like their mom or their teacher. And then all the experts who are in charge of helping protect that child are all witnessing that forensic interview from a separate room, so the child only has to talk to one person. And then that information can be shared with their therapist or even the medical examiner who needs that information. It is a system response to a very significant problem.
I always ask this question, are you busy?
Yes, we are very busy. We would love to work ourselves out of a job, but unfortunately, this is a very underreported crime. And so we're only expecting, especially in Child Abuse Awareness Month, to get busier as we get the word out about protecting children.
Obviously, we'll talk about how to best support specifically this month before I go to you, Kyle. Is this still the stat? According to national data, 1 in 10 kids will be sexually abused before their 18th birthday?
That is correct. And another stat that is most significant, too, is that the average age of disclosure is typically 52. And so while this is also underreported, it's also under-talked about. And so anything that we can do to help create safety and security around talking about child sexual abuse is so important.
Scott, what do you add to that, please?
Well, in this great month of April, we want to bring awareness. So we have a lot of ways that people can get involved, show their support, and really be there for the 16,000 or so kids we have right here in Kent County under the age of 18. We're asking people to do everything from wear blue. Blue is the color of Child Abuse Prevention Month.
Thank you for wearing blue.
Yes, of course. And I brought you a blue pin.
Oh,
so
good.
Anyone
can... Your nails are even blue.
Exactly. We're all in for the month of April. We also have a pin-up program where you can reach out to me specifically and get little branded logos to show your support at your business or community center. We have multiple Dine to Donate events happening at Qdoba, BC Pizza, and Urban Fire Pizzeria. You can find all that great information on our Facebook page at facebook.com/KentCAC. We're also this weekend doing something very cool at Trinity Lutheran Church and planting a pinwheel garden. So you'll see if you drive by their location at Cascade and Fulton, you'll see beautiful pinwheels up the rest of the month. And then we're turning the gallery parking ramp at Division and Fulton blue the week of April 13th. So all of this is really to remind people that we are here as a center for the kids in Kent County. We want everyone to know about our resource. We want everyone to know that child sexual abuse does happen, unfortunately, in our community, but there is a, as Megan said, a coordinated response to help with that. And then when we wrap up this month, we also want people to join us for our Believe the Child Luncheon on May 7th at the Frederick Meyer Gardens. And we'll also have a golf outing at the end of May, the NCACU golf outing on May 29th. And all of this you can find information for on our Facebook page. So just really bringing a light to helping the kids in our community.
And I trust the Facebook page is Children's Advocacy Center of Kent County.
It is, yes. Facebook.com/KentCAC.
And it takes dollars and people to obviously move the button forward.
It certainly does. Any contribution will help directly move our mission forward. We also have a wonderful program called Kids Have Rights, which is our prevention program, because it is statistically proven that prevention can help. So all donations go towards the work of the center.
All right, let me spend a moment with you, Megan, as clinical supervisor. Prevention can help. How am I preventing this?
Yeah, absolutely. So oftentimes with our Kids Have Rights program that's in the schools, this is the first time that children are getting the information that their body is theirs and what is a safe touch and what's an unsafe touch. So the more children that we can educate about what's okay and what's not okay, and then what do you do when something not okay happens, the more more that we can help prevent sexual abuse from being able to continue and also to be able to start.
Yes. And digging a little deeper, a sign or symptom of a child experiencing sexual abuse would be?
Sure. There is actually not a this is the symptom that you need to look for. It's often changes in behavior. So if you have a child who's typically outgoing and excited and encouraged, and then they come into, let's say, the classroom and they're more reserved or keeping to themselves, or you have a child who doesn't typically exhibit big signs of anger, that's also something to keep out on. You know, our adults actually know kids so well, and those adults that love and care for those kids, you know them best. And so anything that you think might be out of the ordinary or even just atypical for that child could be something to ask them about.
Yes. And lastly, before obviously I go back to how I help this month, you are the Children's Advocacy Center of Kent County. This is National Child Abuse Prevention Month. There are other ways, that other descriptions of abuse, not only sexually, I trust.
Yeah, absolutely. So physical abuse, sexual abuse, and emotional neglect are all types of abuses that children can experience. We at our center have the privilege that our forensic interviewers are trained to interview children from all types of abuse and neglect.
Yes. What else do we need to know in closing from you, Megan?
All of our services are provided free to all of our families. No child deserves to be a victim of sexual abuse, and so no family deserves the cost of getting the treatment or the healing. And so all of our therapy services are free. Our forensic interview is also provided free of no cost, as well as our advocacy services. So after a child has experienced sexual abuse, there's the extra layer of having to go to criminal court. And so our advocates can help walk the families through, you know, what are the next steps in the process. They also go to court with our children if they have to testify against their offender. And it's just a face that you know and you recognize, that somebody you've met who's in your corner.
Hence, Kyle Leonard, a reason to eat a lot of pizza this month, right?
Yes, indeed. Yeah, we want people to head to Qdoba BC Pizza, Urban Fire Pizzeria, and then wear that blue, check out the gallery parking ramp, take your picture by the blue building. We'd love to see it all on our Facebook page, so we ask people to share, as well as visit our website at cac-kent.org, where you can find ways to contribute financially to the cause, and you can also reach out to me if you'd like to come have a tour of our building and see our mission at work.
Yes, that should be a requirement for all, as you are, as you say, busy and not quite yet out of business. There we are. We say that in a positive way. Okay, thank you, Clinical Supervisor Megan Van Wy, you, Kyle Leonard, Development and Communications Director, April, National Child Abuse Prevention Month. We strong here in West Michigan. Thanks to your Children's Advocacy Center of Kent County. Please stay strong.
Thank you.
Your inspiration for the day, according to Natalie Babbitt, don't be afraid of death, to be afraid of an unlived life. You don't have to live forever, you just have to live. I think I'll sign up for another race on that note. Hope you enjoyed the show. Have a super day.